Welcome to the Scaling Tech Podcast, the podcast for growing engineering teams. As always, this episode is brought to you by AgilityFeet.com, providers of technical staffing and software development services in Latin America for clients globally.
I think the AI myth is when I've talked to customers and said, I'm not ready for AI. Everybody's ready for AI.
We think now the challenge in Mexico is awesome. We have always believed in Mexico.
If you have an idea and you don't implement it in a few days or a month, you're behind. You're already behind. Yeah. Somebody's going to come up with that idea.
I still think that AI shouldn't run free at all.
I'm your host, Aaron Sine, and welcome to part two of our series on AI engineering in Mexico.
All right, I'm here in Mexico City doing recordings around AI engineering for the Scaling Tech Podcast. And when people talk about AI engineering, building AI applications, we tend to be very Silicon Valley focused in that conversation, which is a shame because it misses out on a lot. And in Latin America in general, we have a tremendous amount of engineering talent, wide and growing adoption of AI. And Mexico City is an interesting place to see kind of what's happening in that.
In part one of this series, we talked about how AI is being used in traditional industries like healthcare and public infrastructure in my conversations with Dr. Carlo Angelo and Dr. Gabriel Barrera Delgadillo. And we explored how teams are being reshaped by AI in my conversations with Andres Del Cos and Pablo Fajer. And I spoke with AI experts like Osvaldo Ramirez Hurtado about the importance of avoiding vanity metrics and focusing on delivery of value to our users and our businesses. AI allows us to do many technically interesting things, but we want to build things that are useful and valuable. And Dr. Francisco Javier Novoa told us about how many companies need to reassess their services and focus on providing a human touch in addition to tasks which can be best done by AI. In this second and final episode of our series on AI engineering in Mexico, I'll bring you more insights from my interviews with those guests and more around technical talent in Mexico, examples of AI engineering being done in Mexico, and we'll talk more about leadership in the age of AI.
Latin America has strong engineering talent, growing AI adoption, and teams that are able to work with the U.S. in real time. The proximity of Mexico to Silicon Valley makes the availability and the quality of this AI engineering talent even more valuable.
That combination of talent and proximity has made Mexico an important part of the global technology ecosystem. To learn more about this, I spoke with Pablo Fajer, founder of Codafin. In our prior episode, Pablo told us about how they built their AI recruiter named Cody, which helps them to quickly identify the best talent for their clients' capability centers in Mexico. Pablo also told me more about why companies are looking for talent in Mexico.
So at Codafin, our main goal and our focus is helping U.S. companies mainly establish what we call capability centers in Mexico. Mm-hmm. So what we've seen is there has been two very important trends that we've seen has happened in the IT or tech space, which is one, a lot of companies are moving into in-house teams. They want to create value for the company, and therefore they are trying to develop, create technology with in-house team, being them the sole owners of that technology. And two, that to have them all in the U.S., it's very expensive. So obviously they are analyzing nearshore opportunities. Why? Because the talent that they're looking for isn't junior talent. It's senior talent that can use AI capabilities in order to develop stronger and more valuable products. And therefore that talent has to be in constant contact, very close to the product or service that they're giving. So that's why Mexico has become a prime location.
Okay, so Pablo says that North American companies look at talent in LATAM and Mexico in particular because of close proximity. Along with cost savings, that's the typical argument for nearshoring. But there's another benefit which Pablo has just highlighted, which is the ability to treat your LATAM team like it's part of your company and part of your in-house team. You can do this a couple of different ways. One is to actually establish your own legal entity in Mexico and hire the talent directly. Well, that's definitely more complicated than U.S. companies are used to.
All of the regulatory processes that they are not used to in the U.S., Mexico for some reason has very complicated payroll processes, registration processes, IMS, statutory benefits, all of that stuff. They think it's simpler than it really is. And I don't think I have seen a client that says, I have done it all by myself without any issues.
This is something I can personally relate to. My company, Agility Feed, is a US company, but we've also set up legal entities in multiple countries in Latin America. And I can confirm that setting up a corporate entity and bank accounts anywhere in LATAM is not easy. That's why companies like Codafin, like my company and others, will help you with this process. You definitely want to work with someone who's done it before, who knows the local tech talent, but also has the connections with legal and accounting counsel to make sure your legal entity is set up and operated correctly. For companies in regulated industries like fintech or healthcare, for example, going through these extra legal steps is a good idea so that you have total control of how and where the work is being done, but you still leverage the higher talent availability and relatively lower cost of living in most of Latin America. But you don't have to set up your own legal entity. Many of these same companies also will help you recruit the talent for your technical capability center, as well as administer it on your behalf. In my company, we call this our build, operate, transfer model, which is something that can provide value beyond a pure staff augmentation or project-based model if you want the possibility of long-term ownership of your operations in LATAM. But enough about legal issues. What about the size and quality of the talent pool? Here again, Pablo Fajer shared some interesting insight with me about the talent pool in Mexico specifically.
When they do their analysis or when they contact people in Mexico and say, hey, how's the talent in Mexico? Talent is amazing. You'll get to see, you have around the talent pool of 1 million developers. And they say, wow, so it's going to be very simple, very easy to hire this talent. When they get to Mexico, they say, you know what? That's not the case. Why? Because in Mexico, it's very separated in what we call the GCC talent with the overall talent. The overall talent is, yes, correct, around 1 million developers, around 900,000. But GCC talent is very different. It's bilingual talent. It's talent that comes from certain universities. It's talent that has the technical capabilities that most of these companies are looking for. So that's why when we talk about GCC talent, that reduces to around 20 to 25% of the overall talent. And that's the main issue that they have. They come to Mexico and they have such a hard time finding the correct talent.
Pablo's made an interesting point there. Yes, there is a lot of technical talent in Latin America. Nearly 1 million developers in Mexico alone. But if you're a US or Canadian company, then you're probably looking for professionally bilingual talent so you can integrate them into your team. In addition, you're looking for specific tech stacks that you work on and maybe experience in your industry also. And if on top of that, you're looking for talent that has experience with the latest AI engineering techniques or experience integrating applications with LLMs and voice AI, the pool of talent is getting smaller. It's still a large talent pool that's worth exploring, but you'll need some help to find that talent, which brings me back to the role of AI in recruiting talent.
We think now the talent in Mexico is awesome. We have always believed in Mexico as a generator of talent. It's quite scarce nowadays, and it's getting more expensive as we start developing AI as a commodity nowadays. But I think you can actually still find good quality of people.
That voice you just heard is Pablo Lelo, Senior Managing Director at Grupo Huntred. Huntred is another company that specializes in finding talent in Mexico, and they're also applying AI to their work. They're using AI in two different ways and have developed two different models. The first is to help them find talent, and the second one is an internal tool that they use to help their clients analyze their existing workforce.
Well, the take that Grupo Huntred has been taking on the AI aspect has been to actually create two different models. One in which we try to orchestrate in any type of levels, all the recruiting and all the selection piece of the process, and try to achieve to incorporate better people, but not only in a specific hard skill or soft skills matters, but to create a holistic profile of the people and actually to incorporate into companies, because we think or we can actually predict that that's going to create a better value, a better understanding, a better cultural fit to the company. And with this type of models, we can actually gasp not only what's going to happen on the short one, but on the long one as well. So, and the second model we actually created is not only for specific people, but actually to be able to provide a more holistic, a more general insight of what's going on with not only new talents, but people who are already within the company, try to understand what's going on, how they interact, how they can actually create synergies and all that kind of information to improve your productivity, to improve your organizational development and all that. So it's a big model.
That is, yeah, that's really interesting. I hadn't considered that angle before. So maybe tell us a little bit more about that second part of it, of analyzing your team internally and how they can work together more productively.
So this second model is called Aura, no? And it's a quite a bigger and broader model. It creates about 800 analytic aspects and has 16 servers running all day long just to understand what's going on with all these people. We have over a million candidates and over a million people being currently modeled and integrated into this. So we can provide our clients a better understanding of what's going on in the market and what's going to be happening in the future, because this can also create insights of who's actually using technology, who's actually being well-placed within their companies, and if they need to be moved sideways, upwards, if they need upskilling, any type of skills need to be retrained, all that kind of information we can actually provide nowadays.
In these two episodes of the Scaling Tech Podcast, I've spoken with people applying AI to large infrastructure projects, healthcare, and talent recruitment. When Pablo Lelo from Hunt Red was just telling us about their model, Aurora, he told me that they built that application in Mexico using local talent. In our prior episode, when Pablo Fajer from Codafin told me about their AI recruiting agent, Cody, he also said that they built that in-house using talent in Mexico. So the talent definitely exists in Mexico and more broadly in Latin America to build interesting applications like this to revolutionize your business. In our next segment of this episode, I'm going to learn a bit more about what these companies are learning themselves as they build AI applications in Latin America. This episode of the Scaling Tech Podcast is sponsored by Agility Feet. Agility Feet helps companies build and scale software engineering teams across Latin America. We can help you recruit and build out your engineering center of excellence in Latin America. Or using our in-house engineering teams, we'll build your application for you by applying the latest technical practices around LLMs, voice AI, and AI-driven software development. Learn more about our work at agilityfeet.com. Let's talk now about building AI systems themselves. To start, I had an interesting conversation with Alberto Alejandro Duarte from Paradox Systems. Paradox Systems is a company from the Baja California Sur region of Mexico, and they work at the intersection of renewable energy and artificial intelligence. Alberto told me how, as part of their work, they are developing a novel approach to large language model safety, which could be applied to other AI use cases also.
Pero básicamente, entre ellos, tenemos un desarrollo que es un software que permite filtrar antes de que llegue a...
This is ongoing research that Alberto's team is doing, where, as he told me, they're building in a context filtering layer before anything reaches the LLM they're using. By providing certain critical rules to this filtering layer, it acts like a persistence layer. It's inspired by biological principles and how nature tends to favor systems which are persistent, that is, they can provide a consistent structure or coherence over time. They're seeing positive results in their initial testing, where the model seems to hallucinate less often if they apply this pre-filtering to it. As part of their testing, they apply noise to the data to confuse the model, and they're seeing positive results that their filtering layer helps the LLM to still recognize objects amidst the noise.
Entonces, ya hemos probado en varios contextos con ruido, con haciendo olvidarlas, haciendo pierde alucinaciones. Entonces, pues ahí estamos trabajando en eso. Y pues aquí, para que se sepa que en México también estamos haciendo desarrollo científico respecto a la inteligencia artificial.
As Alberto said there in the end, it's an interesting example of how there is scientific development being done in Mexico regarding artificial intelligence. Research like this could help make AI systems more reliable, more trustworthy, and harder to manipulate. There's a joke going around that because of LLMs, the most common programming language of the future will be English, not React, C++, or even JavaScript. Because we can talk to AI tools and give them a prompt in English, and the AI will draft code for us, we don't have to be experts in particular coding languages anymore. That's an interesting vision, but let's think outside of our technology bubble for a moment. If the use of AI is going to be widespread, not just for coding, then not everyone in the world can use English to communicate with AI tools, right? Speaking another language is not as simple as pasting text into the most common online translation tools. There's local dialects, colloquial phrases, and much more to consider. I've been learning Spanish for over a decade now, and I'm constantly learning interesting tidbits unique to the country I'm traveling in. English may be the most common language used in technology, but as a natively spoken language, it's only the third most popular language globally. Mandarin Chinese is the most popular native language in the world, and Spanish is second, with nearly 500 million native speakers. When I was speaking with Dr. Eduardo Perez, the organizer of the AI Expo, we talked about how the global importance of Spanish as a language should affect model development. That led Eduardo to tell me about another Mexican company, Celestial Dynamics, that's building an LLM specifically to cater to speakers of Mexican Spanish.
I want to come back to the point you made about Spanish being the second most common native language in the world, which is really interesting. We were talking about that earlier, and it shows the importance of the Spanish-speaking market, certainly. And so for companies that are building AI-driven applications, you know, I guess maybe talk a little bit about what is the impact that you think that has on how we should be building AI applications, that because I feel like the conversation is very Silicon Valley focused a lot of times, right? Which means it's very English focused also.
Correct.
Right.
Yeah. Correct.
And so a lot of, while certainly LLMs can do translation for us, and that's a great help, there may still be some other differences maybe in how they're built or how they're trained or, you know, yeah. What are your thoughts on that?
The first thing that comes to mind is there's actually the solutions partner here in Mexico City. Their name is Celestial Dynamics, in English, Celestial Dynamics. And their goal, or one of their tools, is they create an LLM specifically for the people that speak Spanish in Mexico, okay? Because there's some words that are uniquely to Mexico and to Mexico City and to the, it's like in the States, right?
Right.
You can tell a Texan from a guy from New York, from a guy from Florida, and from the guy from the West Coast, right?
Right.
Same here. And they have different words that have different meanings depending on where you are in the different places. So that's one thing they're doing. They're doing the LLM specifically for Mexico.
That's a good example of how the dialects are different in Latin American Spanish. Mm-hmm. And so that shows the importance of building models that are focused on certain regions as well as certain use cases,
correct.
Right?
Correct.
So, you know, I think it's commonly talked about in you know, kind of in the industry in general, that, for instance, if you're building something for healthcare, you're probably going to build a model that's fine-tuned towards medical terminology, maybe has extra guardrails in it, et cetera, right? And somewhat similar, too, if you're doing something that is directed at the local market in Mexico, right?
Right.
Understanding the differences in language.
And you probably understand it because your market is Latin America as well.
Right.
And you know that there's a difference in culture and the way things happen in the United States. It's different the way it happens in Brazil. It's different in Mexico. And being able to integrate all of that, I think that's really key.
The work that companies like Celestial Dynamics are doing to build custom models for regional purposes is another example of how Latin America is not just a source of talent, it's also an area where innovation in AI is happening. Building innovative applications that use AI is not easy, though. We're still in the early days, and everyone's learning a lot about best practices and how to build systems that you can truly rely on for enterprise processes. When I was speaking with Pablo Ferrer about how they built their AI recruiter, Cody, using talent in Mexico, I asked him, what was the most difficult challenge that they ran into? Perhaps not surprisingly, it was around hallucination rates.
Probably our first most important issue that we had initially was that at the end of the day, these models are very new and they hallucinate a lot. So we would get these hallucinations and the percentage of our matches would be very good, but suddenly we would get people that I would say, why are we recommending him that? And it's something that the AI hallucinates. So when they read CVs and the AI read CVs, we have right now around the 92% accuracy, but we started with a 42% accuracy. So at first we'd say, this is so new that it doesn't work at all because we still have to redo all of the job because at the end of the day, the AI is recommending 50% of the skills that are needed. And so we had to create certain AIs in order to grade our AI. And so a lot of different loops that we created generated that level of accuracy. And I think that's probably the most, the biggest factor right now with coding with AI or creating AI products, the level of accuracy that you can generate with this. Because at the end of the day, if they don't have the accuracy that is required, then it doesn't work at all. Yeah. And I think that was probably our biggest factor at the beginning.
That makes sense. So initially you saw a lower level of quality or success than you wanted, but in by building in, it sounds like some supervisor agents sort of help evaluate as well as sort of human evaluation of things and refining a model over time, you get up to, you said 92% accuracy, which is fantastic.
Which now is something that we can say, hey, we'll get probably an 8% where it doesn't make sense, but that's why we have our recruiters doing all of the filtering as well.
Once again, I like the way Pablo's thinking here. Codafin built an early technical prototype, tested it in real-world scenarios, and the initial hallucination rate was too high for Cody to be useful. But they didn't give up. They iterated and built in additional processes and supervision in the AI to reduce the hallucination rate to something more manageable. But they use a combination of humans and AI so that they're getting the best of both worlds. The AI is much more efficient at upfront research processes, so that's where they put their AI agent to work. But human recruiters still do reviews of the candidates and interview them before presenting to the client, which effectively eliminates the negative effects of hallucination and allows for human verification of quality. That's a good example of the value of keeping humans in the loop. So I asked Pablo to share with me what he would advise an engineering manager. Where should you keep humans in the loop, and when should you let the AI run free?
I still think that AI shouldn't run free at all. I think that enable all of your developers to use it, to use Cursor, to use all of the different tools that you have, but they have to be solely responsible of the product that they give. Mm-hmm. And so now, obviously, times are much quicker. So time to product is probably 5 or 6 times faster than it used to be. But what that helps you do is iterate and make it a much better product. Mm-hmm. So I don't think that it's, hey, let's run this with AI and then you create these systems, etc. It's about, hey, the same as before, but let's just create a bigger, faster, and better product.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little about how AI is changing leadership teams. And this is another area where my guests had interesting advice to share. Here's Andres Socos from Escala Mi Negocio talking about the role leadership needs to play in an AI transformation.
So leadership has to have the ambition to actually move forward with digital transformations. And this ambition is not only about let's do a digital transformation, let's add AI, but be deeply involved in the initiatives and be deeply involved in the follow-up of all these initiatives. Because when employees see that their own director, their founder is really involved in these projects, they also feel more sure that this is going to be a success. So that's one part. And I think we could talk about the 5, but I'll talk about the 2 most important.
Okay.
And I think the second one would be on the data part. So imagine having an organization of, I don't know, 50, 100 people, but nobody is data-centric or data-obsessed. You really need to have these people know and understand that data is kind of like the central nervous system of the company in the future.
Andreas also talked to me about the types of partners that companies might want to bring in to help with an AI transformation. This could come in the form of consulting or as an implementation partner to build out specific solutions.
Owners know their business, they know their operation, and they have to get occupied into managing the business, right? So I think there's two types of things of partners that they need, right? One would be a partner that only does some type of consulting and guides them through, and they can do all this in-house.
Yeah.
Which these type of companies are the more on the medium, bigger side of things because they have money and they have time to invest in innovation and invest in an area that actually can do all this type of stuff, which will take time.
Yeah.
And there's those which are smaller, which actually they don't have the budget to actually do an area and have one person actually looking at this digital transformation AI every day. Because even me, that I am focused on AI, every week you get something new. So it's going to be impossible, right? So these are the two types of partners that they should be thinking, right?
The biggest challenge for some companies is knowing when you're ready to start implementing AI in your teams. It's hard to feel ready when you know that the pace of change is hard to keep up with. But Andre says everyone's ready for AI.
I think the AI myth is when I've talked to customers and said, I'm not ready for AI. Everybody's ready for AI.
Ready.
Everybody's ready for AI, but they're in different parts of implementing AI. Maybe I'm in the part of, I'm going to use AI for productivity. Maybe I'm going to use AI to generate my databases. Maybe I'm going to use AI to transform my whole business.
Yeah.
Everybody's ready for AI, but they kind of like, it's the human nature of being scared of something new and something different.
Sure.
So don't be scared. You are ready to implement AI.
Choosing the right implementation and consulting partners is crucial. But there's another key to making an AI transformation successful, and that's your leadership team. Dr. Francisco Javier Novoa from Cultura Agile spoke with me about some of the qualities that leadership needs to have.
Los líderes hoy tienen que aprender a trabajar en ese ambiente ambiguo para poder moverse bajo condiciones que no necesariamente son predecibles y que tienes que improvisar, siempre apoyado en diferentes escenarios.
Dr. Novoa explained that leaders must learn to work in ambiguous environments due to the rapid pace of change in AI capabilities, as well as the non-deterministic nature of AI. Leaders need to be able to improvise and work under conditions which are not always predictable. He also talked about the difference between transformational leaders and maintenance leaders. They're both valuable depending on the environment you're working in. He used aspirin as an example. It's been a successful product for so long, and there's not much you need to evolve in an organization dedicated to making an established product like aspirin. A maintenance leader can be perfect for that situation. But leaders need to have a more transformational mindset when working with cutting-edge technologies like AI. He also spoke with me about how some organizations would rather be fast followers than leaders. They would rather see another company take the risk first and identify the product market fit, because they don't want to be the ones stumbling around. In our prior episode, AI professor Osvaldo Ramirez Hurtado from the Pan American Business School talked with me about how important it is to focus on the value being delivered in your application instead of just thinking about the technology side of things. I asked Osvaldo about advice he would have for engineering leadership teams as they embark on AI projects. And in addition to his comments in our last episode about defining a proof of value, he also told me about the importance of soft skills.
What I just believe in these three things, the first one is think about first on the need of the business, rather than think about more on the engineer or system perspective.
Right.
Technology will be always there.
Right.
It will be exponential. It will be always someone who did something, create something, and so on. Think about the internal need. And then through the internal need, make the description align to that piece. Whenever you are looking for some talent, align the description give the time to analyze if the description match with the process, because nowadays we are in a disruption moment where the job descriptions are not immediately perfect, and normally you are expecting that this guy arrives and you want an evangelist with a lot of technologies, vibe coding, a lot of coding itself and so on, when you are just needing someone who translate the business needs into an AI world. Also, the second piece for me is being directly, not just thinking in code, thinking as well more widely open on science, mathematics, statistics, and more mixture of fields that you will be needing to interpret your own code. And the third piece is always think about, you have to reduce your own ego. You have to work on the soft skills rather than the hard skills, because otherwise you will be always being in the top of the ego perspective and not reducing your way of translating the needs of the business, you know.
So what did my guest tell me about leadership in the age of AI? If you're leading an AI initiative, make sure you're comfortable working with ambiguity in a fast-paced environment. Ensure you have the right partners in place. And as you put your team together, don't just think about their coding or technical skills. Make sure they also have the right kind of ego, temperament, and knowledge to put business and user value ahead of shiny technical objects.
If you have an idea and you don't implement it in a few days or a month, you're behind. Yeah. You're already behind.
Yeah.
Somebody's going to come up with that idea.
That's Dr. Eduardo Perez again, and we were talking about how much software development has changed in both of our careers. Turns out we have a personal connection I didn't know prior to our interview. He was an engineer at National Instruments in Texas and was part of the team that built a graphical programming language called LabVIEW, which is used by scientists and engineers worldwide as a relatively easy way to build software applications that connect together real-world devices like scientific instruments. In the late 1990s, before I jumped into internet software development, I was a young electrical engineer using the LabVIEW product in support of some faculty research projects at the University of Virginia.
Amazing.
Yeah. So it's a small world.
No kidding.
But I've thought about, because LabVIEW, as you were saying, and for those who aren't familiar, it's like a visual programming, and it's very helpful in like electrical engineering and sort of tying things together.
Correct.
And so a benefit of that was that it allowed me with less programming experience,
correct,
but still strong technical and engineering understanding, mm-hmm, to put together systems more easily. And so I think there's a lot of parallels between how that kind of, you know, LabVIEW programming worked 30 years ago in uh-huh, my career,
uh-huh,
to how we see kind of AI being used now. And yep, one of the things that I've often thought about that in that example is that, you know, it didn't eliminate the need for engineers or engineering knowledge at all. In fact, it enhanced the ability of what we could do and opened up more opportunities for us to create value. And that's kind of the way I think about when people talk about what's the impact of AI on software development. It's huge. It's a big impact.
Yes, it is.
But it is not eliminating. It reshapes how we do work.
You're right.
It opens up doors.
No, I totally agree. For us, that we went through the programming and the steps of that, I think the value there is the richness. And we've had this conversation before with other people. It's the amount of experience that you get over 30 years,
mm-hmm,
40 years. And then these tools come in and they say, like, it's for us is to even keep it. It keeps simplifying the process of developing the product.
Yeah.
Eduardo and I had a good laugh about how small the world really is and how our careers have overlapped. It was a strong reminder to me that even though the definition of software engineering may change over time, there's still an important role for engineers. The truth is, I don't remember many of the details of what I learned as a young electrical engineer, but that engineering mindset has never left me. And the thing I always loved about software development was being able to take an idea, build it, and deploy it into the real world. Software engineering is changing due to AI tools, and the types of software we can build is expanding too, because we can integrate LLMs directly into our applications. But we are all still builders, And AI is also unlocking a whole new type of application software to be developed. A good example of this was my conversation from the first episode with Dr. Carlo Angelo Montagna, the resident doctor of vascular surgery. We talked a lot about how AI can make his work more efficient and reduce burnout by helping doctors to prepare reports, analyze research papers, and prepare for surgeries. But there was one fun example he gave about a surgeon using Meta glasses.
It was so much fun in the operating room. We had an open aortic repair because we screwed in with one of the doctors, and he recently bought his Meta glasses. So he was taking some amazing pictures of every step of the surgery, which can help us later for education. As I mentioned, one of the ways that our hospital in Mexico is that we document everything from the beginning until the patient goes home. And even after the patient goes home, we have a presentation of every patient, like all the follow-up. So during this surgery, the doctor was taking specific pictures, you know, like the skin incision, dividing all the abdomen, and identifying the aorta, the renal vein, dissecting every part to see the all the aorta, every clamping, every suturing, preparing the aortic graft, and suturing the aortic graft, seeing if there's no leakage of the aorta, and also closing everything, and then a final picture of the whole team with the Meta glasses. So I think this is amazing.
Yeah,
I know, because sometimes as doctors, the junior residents who are in the US is the equivalent to the interns, they need to scrub in. They need to take pictures, and sometimes it's difficult because there's they can get contaminated, or maybe it's not a good angle.
Right.
But if you are like looking with your glasses,
it's what the surgeon sees.
It's much more better.
This podcast has not been about wearable devices or augmented reality, and you probably won't see me wearing Meta glasses anytime soon. So why does this story from Dr. Carlo matter? It matters because it shows how minds can be opened and processes can change when we experiment with new technology. When the surgeon puts on Meta glasses during the surgery, it creates an easy way for things to be documented during the surgery without the surgeon having to take their hands away from the surgery itself. But imagine going the next step. The surgeon's wearable medical device is not only documenting their work, but also giving them guidance on the procedure via a heads-up display. Data is being logged about the surgery in real time, and remote observers can analyze that in real time. Perhaps an AI integration is also helping to provide guidance, analyzing and recording notes in real time from what the surgeon is saying, or doing image recognition in real time to look for possible mistakes in the surgery, or to provide contextual information. I'm not a surgeon, so I don't really know. I'm the wrong person to ask. But by putting an innovative device into the hands of someone who does know about surgery, or in this case, putting that innovative device on the face of the surgeon, they can come up with new ideas for us engineers to build. Software engineering may be changing, but it's not going anywhere. There's so much cool stuff just waiting to be built with these new technologies. So let's start building. The story of artificial intelligence isn't happening in just one place. It's happening in universities, startups, hospitals, and engineering teams around the world, including here in Mexico City and throughout Latin America. I've been personally inspired by the people I've met during this week, but I know that it's just the tip of the iceberg. There's so much innovation going on throughout Latin America, and if you're one of those people, then I hope you'll reach out to me. You can find me on LinkedIn, and you can email me at aaron@agilityfeet.com. I'd like to showcase more about the talent in Latin America as part of the Scaling Tech podcast. And so if you've been building something interesting with AI and you have lessons you can share with other engineering leaders, let's talk. I want to close this episode with a quote from Dr. Francisco Javier Novoa that I found inspiring. When I was speaking with Dr. Novoa about advice for teams adopting for AI-driven change, his answer was particularly poetic, so I want you to listen to it first in Spanish, and then hopefully I'll capture the spirit correctly in my translation.
La creatividad tiene que encontrarte trabajando y produciendo, ¿no? Eso de que me llegó el espíritu y me dio la idea, mientras estaba dormido, solo que estuvieras procesando en el sueño. Pero si estás relajado y sin hacer nada, no va a llegar el cambio. El cambio tiene que encontrarte produciendo, experimentando, cuestionando, abriéndote a las posibilidades. En el momento que te abres a las posibilidades, entonces pueden llegar las cosas nuevas.
Dr. Novoa said that creativity has to find you working and producing. If you relax too much and you're not doing anything, then change won't come. Change has to find you producing, experimenting, questioning, and opening yourself to possibilities. The moment you open yourself to possibilities, then new things can arrive. If nothing else, I hope these two episodes of the Scaling Tech Podcast have inspired you to experiment more with AI engineering. I hope that they have also inspired you to look at Mexico and all of Latin America as a great place to find innovative and creative human talent that will help you transform your innovative ideas into reality. Thanks for joining me on this journey, and nos vemos pronto. I hope to see you soon. This episode of the Scaling Tech Podcast was sponsored by Agility, helping companies build and scale software engineering teams across Latin America. Learn more about our work at agilityfeed.com. And to learn more about the Scaling Tech Podcast and all of our interviews around scaling your engineering teams, check us out at scalingtechpod.com. You'll find show notes on our website, including links to my full interviews on YouTube with each of my guests from this episode. Please like, share, and follow us on LinkedIn, YouTube, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts.